Hi, welcome to Express Yourself, a space where creativity and conversation collide. If you aren't out on the street there in Glenwood, then hopefully you're tuned to KDNK. We have a great show lined up today and a studio full of fantastic folks. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly. Brian has maybe got a gig later and Kat was going to join, and I think she's been getting tattooed since 11:30 this morning. It's going to be amazing when she's done. But on the show, she interviewed filmmaker Gabe Polsky on The Man Who Saves the World. It's showing at the Wheeler tomorrow night and at the Crystal Theater on Sunday. And later in the show, Olivia the Bard drops by to perform before her show at Steve's Guitars tonight. But first, in the house, Vanessa Gilbert from Modern West Floral talks about 10 years in business and all the plant-based fun coming up. So stay with us. Everything don't mean a thing. If it ain't the thing you want, express yourself. Express yourself. Everybody, thanks for being with us, and thanks for being out on the street, if that's where you are, because a lot of big stuff happening out there in the world. But we have Vanessa Gilbert. It's so great to have you here, and congratulations on almost 10 years in business. Wow. So maybe for our listening audience, let's just delve right into the origin story of your business.
Yeah, I was working at DHM Design in Carbondale. My background's in landscape architecture. And I liked it, but I was like, man, I feel like I miss meeting all these plants. Like, I'm doing planting plans and on the computer, but I don't really know anybody. So I went to a wedding up in Summit County, and it was beautiful. All the lupins were blooming. And I was like, wow, we live in such a beautiful place. That's why we live here, right? Mm-hmm. But all the flowers for the wedding were imported from somewhere else. So I texted my friend Tara Abatishio, and I was like, hey, what if we started a flower company? Right. And what if we focused on, you know, more local native plants and their beauty instead of importing? And she was like, yeah, let's do it. And so that's how we started.
That's so true. And actually, you came here as an intern out at Sustainable Settings,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah. So I was out there doing vegetables, and I think I was always dreaming of flowers as well. And learned a bunch when I was at Sustainable Settings, but felt like I should, you know, use my degree. So then I went back into the office, but I got to know if it's raining. It's hard to be inside.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think the last time I saw Tara, she was windsurfing in Baja.
Yeah, you betcha. I'm sure. I wonder, she might be going down, you know, in February sometime.
Yeah, I ran into her on the beach there. I was like, oh, whoa. So that's great. And let's talk native plants and flowers. Mm-hmm. And really, what's the difference?
Yeah, so actually native plants. So that's one thing about flowers. Natives are beautiful, but not all of them make great cut flowers. They don't last in the vase. So maybe a more appropriate word would be adaptive or local. So what flowers can live in our beautiful environment, which is very hot and dry, especially on Silt Mesa, and how do we take the images that our clients want for weddings and events and translate them into these flowers that we can grow locally and seasonally. Because I feel like when you get married, you should be able to look at a picture and be like, oh, they had peonies. Like, oh, it must be June. Or like, oh, they had dahlias. It must be September. Like that vernacular language of knowing when, what time of year it is by what flowers you have, I think is lovely.
That's nice. So cool. And because of this, you really had a vision which required a farm.
Yes. Yeah. The farm part. Yep. Is important. Yeah. We actually, in the first couple of years, we really tried to use a wholesaler and we tried to source from American growers, and it just was really hard because they get shipped in a cardboard box out of water. So we'd be waiting at the studio at Saw at like 10 o'clock at night when our order would finally come in, and we'd just be like, ah, oh, this just isn't right. That first year we were leasing land from a residence and we grew a patch of snapdragons. We're like, oh my gosh, this is like, we don't even know what we're doing, but these are so much more beautiful and alive than anything that you can order. And so we're like, shoot, we're going to have to grow our own.
So hence now you are a farmer. You're kind of from source to
seed to vase.
Yeah,
seed to vase.
Is that what you got? Seed to vase. Look at that.
Yeah, we start almost all of our plants from seed. There's some we do order from like plug suppliers and stuff, but I just finished our seeding schedule. I planted some seeds in January that need to be in a cold, dark environment for a while, for about a month. So lots of your perennials will need that, like Echinacea and Rudbeckia like to do that. So I planted those and put those flats outside. But our annuals, we're going to get started on February 9th will be our first round.
Wow. So obviously you have some greenhouses that help.
We actually are kind of low key. We start all our seeds in an old chicken coop that was converted to a man cave and then converted to our flower seed starting shop. So we just have standard shop lights and we start all of them there. And then we do have two high tunnels that we upgraded. They have automated roll up sides that help with the temperature, but we we'll move flats of starts out there to harden off once it gets a little warmer.
Wow. So Modern West Floral, if someone, you know, is having a wedding, I mean, are you mainly communicated with very early on in the planning stages?
We love it when people communicate with us early because we're literally planting that plant for you. So we'll typically start getting inquiries November of the, you know, November 2025 for 2026. And then we'll book. We'd like to get them early. We like to get bookings now so we can make sure that we have the right colors and things for you. So, I mean, it's kind of custom planting. Like, who
That's
else does
cool.
that?
I know. I had no idea. So if you were getting married, you would, and you had a vision, they would just talk with you and you'd try to make that vision happen.
Oh, you want more yellow? Okay, I'll make sure that in June we have more yellow just for you.
Wow, that's fantastic. It really is. And now that you are running this farm and the flowers, where, like if someone wanted to get flowers, is it all you have to pre-order them, or how do people get these?
Yeah, there's a couple ways. We have a flower share program, so that's bi-weekly or weekly in the summer, June through October, so you could sign up for that now. And then you get different flowers each week, pick up in Carbondale at Botany House Plant, or in the farm on Silt. You can get bulk buckets, so if you have an event or something, we can do bulk buckets for you. And then we also sell at Whole Foods. So this is our probably eighth season selling at Whole Foods. Yeah, Tuesday, Friday deliveries, June through October.
So, oh, that's fabulous. Yeah. So you're busy. So what are the things that can really affect growing flowers?
Oh, man. Water is a huge one. And I'm like, man, why do I feel so tense all the time? And I'm like, oh, because it's been so dry. So water is really big. We are adapting our planting schedule to grow more plants that are more drought tolerant once established. So that's helpful. And I kind of want to cover the whole farm in a shade cloth because it's so sunny.
So sunny. I know, I know. Isn't it crazy that the sun, and honestly, I feel like the sun is hotter on my skin these days too. So I'm sure the flowers feel it as well.
And actually for cut flowers, we're trying to get those long florist quality stems. And so when it's really sunny, things don't need to grow as tall. So in our high tunnels, we actually have shade cloth. And so when you put shade cloth, it makes them stretch and reach for the sun more. So like if you've ever had a leggy plant, that's because they're not getting enough sun. And so here I'm like, oh man, that's kind of short. And I think it's a combination of very sunny and the water.
So yeah, the challenges aren't going to end. That's for sure. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you have upcoming. You're going to be doing a series of workshops with botany.
Yeah, botany houseplant. Leslie actually helped us out on the farm, maybe 2018. She was an intern.
Oh, really?
So it's really fun to like
full circle.
So we have a successful seed starting workshop at Botany Houseplant. I can't remember the date, but it's on their website. And that one's probably my favorite workshop. I felt like when I first started growing, I was like, gosh, how come these seeds aren't working? And so we run through all the things, and I've killed a lot of plants, so I can help you through those troubles. And then we have a dahlia class, and so that one we'll talk about tubers and how to know if they're viable and when to plant them. I think the other thing about living here is a lot of the gardening info that we get is, you know, from lovely people from Ohio or back east, where we just are a totally different growing environment. Mm-hmm. And so, especially with dahlias, I feel like that was something that I was like, man, all this information I'm getting doesn't quite work for us. And so then over the years, I'm like, oh, this is what we have to do differently for them to be successful for us here. And then our last class is going to be a flower arranging class right before Mother's Day.
Ooh, what fun.
And it's going to combine heirloom narcissus, so daffodils, with dried flowers. I got this cookbook a long time ago, and there's this recipe that's like a apple rhubarb cobbler or something. And they, I don't know, I like reading recipes, and they so beautifully like talked about how like rhubarb is the first of the season, and then you take the last of the storage apples and you combine them and make this wonderful tart. And so that was kind of the, what's it called? Like what I wanted
inspiration
to do. Inspiration for this course is like, so you're taking those dried flowers from the fall and then you're combining them with those very first blooms of the season. And I feel like daffodils don't get the recognition they deserve. They're deer resistant. They come back every year, and there's so many beautiful colors.
Well, you know, I'm glad you're here because, you know, my daffodils go like this big. They're really pretty, but they're very small.
Very short.
I can't get, same with my tulips. And I don't know if it's my dirt or the location. Why are they not growing taller?
It could be a couple things. One could just be variety. So whenever I'm doing any shopping bulbs, seeds, anything, I'm always looking to see how tall they are. Because daffodils, there's lots of different varieties, and some of them are very short. The other thing could be water. So tulips, they need a lot of water in the spring. Like in Holland, you know, like they have all the windmills, and the windmills are moving water to water the tulip fields. And so I actually stopped growing tulips at the farm because I kept getting really short stems. And it was because we just don't have, the digits aren't on yet, and we just aren't getting the rainfall that time of year.
So I just need to build a little windmill in my...
Yeah, bring the water in.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know. Huh. But that's good because every year I'm like, why?
Do you know what varieties they are?
I planted them so long ago.
Okay.
And every year I just think, well, what is it? Why aren't they? You know, I keep thinking it's my soil, but that's interesting.
I think it's a water thing. Because what I've read is really the bulb, I mean, it's obviously soil plays an important part, but the bulb is kind of like the yolk. Like, you know, it like has all the nutrients and everything that that plant needs. But I guess if they're coming up year after year, they could be, are they blooming? Do they just bloom on short stems?
They bloom, but they're just really not tall.
I feel Short stems are always an issue. We're like, gosh, we can't do anything. We always try to get at least 18 inches. For especially for our market bouquets.
Yeah.
So I feel you on that one.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's talk. You brought me a beautiful bouquet of dried flowers. So do you also dry flowers that can be used throughout the winter? Like if someone comes to you and they're having a winter wedding.
We are just getting into dried flowers. Mm-hmm. I think to have year round, I would love to have beautiful things available year round for everyone. And since we're local seasonal, then in the winter though, it's like, okay, well, we got to do dried flowers. I'm not going to put heat in the tunnels or do light in the tunnels. Yeah. Like that's so much energy. Like, why don't we just take these beautiful things that dry? So, we've increased the number of flowers that are good dried flowers in our planting plan. But it's funny because last year, I had the intention of drying all these ones, but we sold them all fresh. We don't have a ton right now. We do have a few dried bouquets at Wild Coffee and Silt for Valentine's Day. And if you wanted a Valentine's Day dried, you could email me. But we don't have a ton of inventory. I'm hoping to increase that. So.
That's awesome. Wow. So how long have you been on the farm now?
So we moved to Silt in 2020. It was in August, so we didn't have that growing season. And then 2021 was kind of it takes a little bit of time to start a farm. So 2021 wasn't the best. We were still starting up. So I would say this is our fourth season at our new location.
So. Oh, that's beautiful. I mean, I love it out there. And of course, that farm has a lot of great history here right in this building because Sandy Pickard used to own that and work at SCI right across from where the studio is now. Now KD&K has the whole place, but there's a lot of history there.
Yep, that was really fun when we went to go look at the house the second time and they were there and we were like, oh my gosh, we know the same people. So it was good.
Yeah. Well, this is wonderful, Vanessa. So the workshops, is that a new thing or have you been doing the workshops?
We did workshops last year at Botany and then we actually also did workshops at True Nature. Hopefully we'll get some. I just started talking with True Nature to see if we could get some flower arranging workshops there as well. And just spread and share the beauty. Because I feel like a lot of what we grow, you're not going to see otherwise. Like you won't see it at the grocery store unless it's our bouquets and stuff. So hopefully it's a good treat.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And you do have other people that help you in the summer, right? You have interns or how's that?
Ava is going to be this will be her third season. She's our field manager. And then we are hiring for a studio lead. And then we also have some paid interns. Positions. So if you don't have a lot of experience, but you want to learn, then we would love to have you apply. And harvesting takes a lot of time. I did hourly, like all the tasks, and we need help harvesting. Flowers, you got to do it by hand. Like there's no, and each flower is harvested in a different way at a different stage. It's very, I like the tediousness of it. It's like, very specialized.
And it's so tactile.
Yes.
And you know, I mean, if you had to hang out around flowers all day, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And it's in the morning. So I like getting up in the morning, too. So it's good.
Well, thank you so much. So if someone wants to contact you or find out more, where do they go?
You can email me at Vanessa@modernwestfloral.com or modernwestfloral.com.
Ah. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. I really congratulations on 10 years. And you've been, a good part of this Carbondale community. And now you're spreading up and down the valley. And that's awesome. So thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, we got a little flowers on the wall here just to get you in the mood. We'll be right back. All right. Well, that was a little rough transition, but hey, we're neophytes here. Anyways, Kat Hardy got to interview Gabe Polsky. He's got the upcoming show, movie that's going to show tomorrow night, or no, the 1st, February 1st, Sunday, at the Crystal. And here is an interview with them. I am going to just play it and enjoy.
Hello, listeners. This is KDNK, and it's your favorite Express Yourself correspondent, DJ Reverend Hardy. And today I have an interview about a movie that's coming to the Valley. The movie is The Man Who Saved the World. And today we have the writer, producer, director, Gabe Polsky, to tell us about the film. Welcome, Gabe, to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to tell everybody about this.
So why don't we just dive right in and let the listeners know about the content. Like, this is a documentary. This is not something you're going to find on Netflix or, you know, anywhere. So dive into that a bit, the nature of the type of film and why you're showing it here in Carbondale and in Aspen.
Yeah. So it's incredibly unusual, a film. It's a documentary. It's a story that kind of came to me out of the blue. You know, nothing I was looking for, and it's this wild story of this incredibly fascinating guy, probably the most fascinating guy you'll ever meet. His name's Patrick McCollum, and he has pretty much done everything from a carny to a famous jewelry designer to a, you know, he's been struck by lightning. He's died and come back to life. He's a peacekeeper. He's best friends with Jane Goodall. I mean, he's pretty much kind of done everything and can do everything, knows everything. I don't know. I've never met a guy like this, and I've been doing this for a little while and have come across so many unusual people, but this guy is definitely one of the most fascinating guys. And he basically, in the last 10 years, he was approached by many different tribes of the Amazon at a peace gathering initially. And they came to him and said, you know, out of millions of people, they came to him and said, you know, we think you're this guy in our prophecy that we've had for hundreds of years about how the earth is going to be in a very difficult place. And they believe that there will be a time, you know, a difficult time on this planet where someone will come and help unite the tribes of the Amazon and essentially restore the Amazon and save the planet. Essentially, because the Amazon's so critical to the weather patterns and everything. And, you know, the guy initially was just like, I don't think I'm the guy. You've got the wrong guy. I'm not this guy. And so they kept coming to him for many years. And finally, he was just like, okay, you know, I'll do what I can. You know, I just, and I'll try and fulfill this prophecy. And that's kind of where I came in and learned about the story and started to follow this guy. Initially, I thought it was all just kind of craziness, but as I started to see this thing unfold, I started to, things were checking out, and it was definitely very, very bizarre. So this movie, it's coming to the Wheeler and the Crystal Theater the next night on February 1st. The Wheeler's January 31st. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the Valley is a very spiritual place. People care about the environment and nature, and also they like to have a great time. And this kind of movie has all of those things. It's very funny. We've got the biggest names in comedy as producers, from Danny McBride, you know, to Peter Farrelly, you know, David Gordon Green and Jody Hill. Those guys at Rough House, they're, you know, at the top of the comedy game. They're producers on the film. We also have Jane Goodall in the movie, and Jane really loved this film and, you know, really wanted to see it, you know, in front of audiences, because it's very funny and it's very unique and bizarre, and it's kind of a rabbit hole of a story, kind of my journey down there. And
as the cosmos tends to be, huh? It's a reflection of what is, I suppose.
Yeah, it's the kind of film that makes you ask a lot of questions afterwards, and sort of you go through this journey of this crazy experience, and it's like transformative, because, you know, people often ask me, you know, what do you want the audience to feel or, you know, go away with? And I just say, look, I don't know what the audience is getting, because everybody's different. And this is that kind of film that makes it's like a reflection. And so whatever you see in it is kind of who you are, and sort of makes you ask a lot of questions about life and bigger picture questions, what stories we believe, why, and you know, makes you think there's a lot of kind of indigenous wisdom in this film as well, and mysticism, as well as comedy.
I love that. I love that so much, because we really, I mean, this couldn't come at a better time with the nature of reality right now. I think that all the listeners and pretty much everyone is ready for some common ground and ready to uplift our humanity. You know, at this point in human history, it seems like that's a pretty important topic if we'd like to live here and stay here. And I want to get into a bit of this prophecy thing. So that I feel like could be a triggering or a point of contention, but also kind of taboo and enticing part of the movie. And so what would you say? Is it, or do you really want people of all faith and belief backgrounds to come and just witness this? Or is there any trigger warnings or anything?
Yeah, it's not like, you know, if you're Christian or whatever, Judeo-Christian or, you know, Muslim or doesn't matter, Hindu, it's not like you're not going to, oh, it's some indigenous prophecy, it's not God. No, it's a much broader feeling than that. And you know, I mean, prophecies have been in every single religion. You know, it's not like it's just indigenous. I mean, they're in every one of them, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just, this happens to kind of come from the indigenous world, but they all kind of actually share a very similar theme, you know, these prophecies.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, is he Celtic? Because I feel like that's part of the prophecy, is because I'm Celtic too, and I'm very much on this mission, on a mission to save the world in my own little way. And I'm like, oh man, are the Celts finally showing up for all this prophecy?
Well, I think he is. You know, I don't want to speak for him, but McCollum, I mean, he actually comes from, his real name is Reverend Patrick McCollum, but he comes from kind of, he was introduced to the world through kind of like paganist, you know, old rituals, you know, and I think they actually come from Ireland or near Ireland, you know, so that's kind of tradition that he came from. So the indigenous to there, but they have, again, similar rituals with fire, air, earth, you know, I mean, all the kind of elements, the sacred elements, you know,
totally.
I'm not a specialist in that, but he actually, you know, was sort of deep in that world, in the Wiccan world, and you know,
that's the Native American.
But he's kind of a man of all faiths. He's not like,
right. It's more about
the
earth.
He knows a lot about it. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But in terms of prophecy, I mean, yeah, it kind of drew me in that sense. And I think that's the sexier part of it. It's just like, wow. Like, cause a lot of listeners, you know, I'm sure have sort of seen a psychic or had these sort of telepathic phenomenon or, you know, magical things, coincidental things, you know, that are sort of beyond logic, you know, that make us sort of wonder about whether it's possible to predict the future, you know what I'm saying? And we've all kind of had these strange experiences in life where something like that might be possible, and it definitely like piques everybody's curiosity. Plus, everybody's wondering what is going to happen here. Mm-hmm. Our world is so kind of on the brink of something strange, you know. So that's kind of was the entryway. But really, what makes this film, and that is in the film, but what makes it compelling at its core, it's like kind of this fascinating character study as well, you know, of Patrick and just his wild life and how inspiring that is, and it's also in a way kind of a strange buddy story. You know, I'm a character in the film as well, because I go down there and I happen to be in the film a little bit. So you sort of, my role is almost like the role of the audience, because we're all kind of wondering what the heck is going on. This is crazy, and I'm kind of grounding the audience as we go through, because it's such a wild story. You know, it's like Don Quixote.
And you're helping put the pieces together.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the film, do we leave feeling uplifted and hopeful about the world? Or what is the vibe?
I think mainly, like, I think people are going to be really inspired, you know. And it's super positive. And the fact that this guy, he's 75 years old, you know, towards the end, kind of in a wheelchair. And the fact that he's doing what he's doing and doing, you know, spending his life and resources trying to do what he's doing, help the world. And, you know, it's remarkable.
Is it the Kogi tribe by chance? Does he interact with the Kogi?
Yeah, the Kogi's involved.
They're such a big deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kogi was the first place that we actually went to start.
Oh, I'm jealous. I've been studying them for years, and they're incredible. Yeah. Their culture and what they've been holding there and how they self-govern and their rituals. It's really, if the listeners haven't heard of the Kogi tribe, you should really educate yourself.
The Kogi are... Yeah, they're part of the Tairona people, and they're incredible. I mean, they're like telepathic. They're so they're so connected to the earth and listen. They know what birds are trying to tell us. They know what the sound of the river, what the river is trying to say. You know, and their whole life is a study of listening to nature. You know, they spend about 18 years. The mamos do in cave, just essentially trying to feel the vibrations of the earth and the signal, you know.
How cool. And I feel like part of this story too is how this interview came to be. Were you the one who called Katie and Kay a few weeks ago?
You know, I think it was someone on my team. You know, we've got a great team that.
So I have to tell you, I was randomly, you know, Bob Weir died and things were going on in the world, and I randomly came to Katie and Kay to play some music. And I'm a study of the Kogi tribe, and that's a big deal in my life. And I do a lot of land stewardship and festivals and things here in our Carbondale community. And I was sitting there in the studio playing music, and someone called that line. So it came to the music studio, not like the office. And when I answered, they were like, hey, we're playing this movie and we want to try to, you know, get on the radio or promote it. Is there anyone we could talk to? And it was me that answered the phone. And I was like, actually,
well, you're part of the process.
I know. That's what I'm realizing.
I mean, but that is the thing, you know, everybody who sees it becomes a part of it.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know that the Grateful Dead, we reached out to Kreutzmann, the drummer, and he saw it and loved it, and we're trying to do something with the Grateful Dead around the film. It's like I was
playing a tribute to Bob Weir when he called.
Wow,
that's what I mean. Yeah. People, this web of life is just like, you can be in awe of it if you're able to witness it, and that comes from that listening that the Kogi do so well. How exciting to be connecting the dots in real time with you right now.
We got to get you over there. I'll personally get you a ticket because of your what you're doing for this planet.
I plan to come, Sunday. So for the listeners, we've been really getting you to grasp the consciousness of this movie and how monumental it can be and how we want you to be part of the revolution and this shift that is coming on the planet. And so if you're up Valley, it's showing at the Wheeler Opera House on Saturday. Do you know, is it at 7 p.m.?
It's at, it's at 7 or 7:30. You got to check it out.
Well, and then on Sunday, it's at the Crystal Theater in downtown Carbondale. And where can listeners find tickets if they want to pre-purchase in case, I feel like it might sell out, so especially at the Crystal.
Yeah.
So where can they pre-purchase tickets?
I guess just at the box office online or the way everybody buys movie tickets, Wheeler site. Yeah.
Or the Crystal site.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. I just want to make sure we get that in there before. And I think it's like doors at 7, maybe show at 7:30 on the Crystal. But like we said, go to the Crystal Theater Carbondale website to get your tickets, or go to the Wheeler Opera House. We do have a few more minutes, so I'm curious if there's anything else about the film. Like, I'm kind of curious, like, who funded it, or, you know, are there players who are backing this? And then, so that's one of my questions, is where did the funding, you know, and support come from? Then also, where do we go after this weekend? You know, what's the long-term picture ahead?
Yeah. So in terms of the funding is concerned, you know, I went to all the usual suspects and you know, Netflix's and HBO and those ones. And I mean, I think it was just ultimately a little, they're just not doing these kinds of films, you know. They like celebrity films, they like, you know, I don't know, films that like, you know, about famous you know, athletes or celebrities or, you know, they're not, this just film's a little bit too far out for them. But at the same time, look, we've got like the biggest names in comedy associated with it. So I think I've proven that, you know, it's in a way it's universal and broad because it's so funny and kind of original, but they just, you know, they just thought it was, I don't know, they couldn't wrap their heads around it. It wasn't about a celebrity or true crime story. So they didn't, you know,
they're obviously not land stewards yet.
Yeah.
They are not connected to the earth the way they could be just yet.
Yeah. So every documentarian does that. They first go to, if they have the relationships, go to the big streamers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just, if anyone would tell you that this would be impossible to do there because they're just, you know, not looking for these kinds of things. And, you know, and so anyways, I went to investors and there's some folks that came on board, but I got to tell you, it's just such a unknown story. In other words, you know, we didn't know where this is going. The prophecy was unfolding. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's far out. It's unknown what the end of this thing is, you know? So they, everybody was sort of scared of this, to be honest. And so a lot of it, you know, I put on my own back and, you know, I thought I was crazy. And, you know, throughout the whole process, I was like, what am I doing? This is too insane. You know, these people. But at the same time, you know, so my mind, I was fighting, my heart was fighting my mind. And I've never made a film where it was so unknown where it was going. You know, so it was a lot of sort of personal mental crisis for me throughout the making of this film. But ultimately, I just believed that I could tell an amazing story. No matter what happened, I felt like I had the ability to weave something really meaningful and interesting and important and something that had great, deep kind of meaning for people to leave with, you know?
And it's unfolding in real time. It's all unfolding.
Exactly.
Will Patrick be at the showings at all? By chance?
Yeah, Patrick will be there. Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
I'll be glad to meet him. Maybe something will happen with, like, the two Celts colliding in Carbondale.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah. I can't.
Wonderful.
That would be awesome.
Gosh, well, we are coming to the end of our interview. Again, this has been Katie and Kay interviewing Gabe Polsky about The Man Who Saved the World, which you can catch in Carbondale on Sunday the 1st. Aspen at the Wheeler on Saturday. Get your tickets online at each respective location. Any parting words or thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I'm just excited to, you know, to see you all there, and it's going to be an incredibly special evening, both of them. So this, you know, I can assure you will be worthwhile.
Awesome. Well, thank you for giving of your heart and your time to this project and to our community. And thank you for bringing this awareness to us. And I can't wait to see you on Sunday.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.
And thank you so much to Kat Hardy for doing that interview. And now we have Kat live in the studio. She has finished her tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I finally made it. It took a little bit longer, but you can't rush, you know, artistry like that. So big up to Bonedale Tattoo, our local tattoo studio, and all the beautiful work that they do.
Yeah, it looks good. So thanks for the interview. And let's talk real quick about Sunday, because not only do we have the film, which starts at 7 at the Crystal here, but what happens before?
So just want to give mad love, gone but not forgotten, to our friend, our farmer, Casey Pascura. He left us a year ago on Monday, February 2nd. So on February 1st, we are having an open jam and potluck, which was his favorite kind of party to host. That's the way he got down. So that's what we're going to do to celebrate his life and honor his passing. 3:30 to 6:30 at Katie and Kay. If you want to be in community, if you knew Casey or not, if you're grieving other things, if you want to be held, it's just going to be a really beautiful collection of people just showing up and hanging out and sharing some songs and tunes and prayers and
wonderful
food. So, yeah, so that's what we're doing to honor our friend, Casey P.
Yay. Well, thanks for doing that. And in the studio life, boy, all of a sudden it got really fun around here. We have Olivia the Bard.
Hello, Carbondale.
Oh, it's so great. You are performing at Steve's Guitarist tonight.
I am, and it's kind of the kickoff of a sort of a residency that I spun up with Steve and Ralph and I, doing a bunch of stuff with Steve. Or at Steve's Guitars this month, this coming month.
Yeah, I saw that. You're also playing with Muggsy Faye. And...
yeah, we're doing a Black Valentine on February 13th, Friday the 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. We're super excited about that. Really great women songwriters come and we'll do it in the round style. So like some interview, some trading back and forth songs. So
that's great.
Eclectic. And- to
you
say
know,
the least.
Olivia, you don't really write love songs, right?
Or broken hearts. You know, I have tried.
We love meat sack, though.
I know, right?
We love that.
I've got a lot of broken heart songs this year, I'm sorry to say. I should have been writing activist protest songs all year, but instead I was mired in my own misery. but that's all right. I know they're
ebbs
coming.
It ebbs and flows. And you and Megsy did something along those lines last year because I went to it.
Yeah, we've been. This will be our third.
It was really fun.
Yeah, this will be our third Queens in the Round showing. We've been three Queens. We've been a pair of Queens, and this time we will be four. So
nice.
Yeah, it's really exciting to get, especially just. I mean, Megsy and I, you know, we're compadres of the banjo, and we play so differently. Our music is so different. It's just really fun to show up together and show two different voices of the banjo. My dream is someday soon we're going to have Muggsy and Natalie and Olivia doing a Queens with banjo show.
I can totally see that.
But this one will be a couple of other Lena. Oh my God, Lena Maud, her last name always leaves my head, and Aaron Strawberry are newer to town, and they're both great, and so it'll be super fun.
Yummy. And tonight, can we have a little sneak peek of a song?
Yeah, I'd love that. So as I was saying, more broken heart songs than activist songs, but in this year, I've really fallen in love with a singer-songwriter named Carsey Blanton. Last night I found a video of hers on Instagram. She has told Folk Alliance that she will accept their award when they make the Folk Alliance festivals free to musicians. And that is the kind of action that folk musicians are getting up to all over the country. And it's so inspiring. And she has this great song called Little Flame that I'd like to play for you guys. And I'll be playing it later tonight, too. But it's a sing-along. It's real easy, the chorus. You just repeat to me, and I'll make it clear. And you guys join in. Yeah?
I'll do it. I'm down.
All right. Cotton field, silver mine, Johannesburg to Palestine, broken treaties, dreams deprived, we kept our little flame alive. Bobby Seale to Bobby Sands, picket held in frozen hands, prison cells and freedom rides to keep the little flame alive. 100 years,
100 years,
100 more,
100 more.
We throw our weight against the door,
against the door.
And even if we don't survive, we kept that little flame alive. The river, cross the sea, a slave, a rat, a refugee, strap the child to your side and keep the little flame alive. Oh, Guevara, Connolly, we hid them in the scullery, secrets whispered by the wives, kept the little flame alive. 100 years,
100 years,
100 more,
100 more,
we throw our weight.
Against the door,
and even if
we don't.
Jungle grapes and gasoline, homemade rifles and kitchen knives kept that little flame alive. In Warsaw, Tulsa, Wounded Knee, they buried us, but we were seeds. And singing from the grave we rise to keep that little flame alive. 100 years,
100 years,
100 more,
100 more.
We throw our weight,
throw our weight
against the door. Shot Joe Hill. He spoke his last and final will. Good luck to all of you. Don't cry, but keep that little flame alive.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. It did make me cry.
It makes me cry.
It makes me cry. What an incredible
time.
Song. Yeah.
So
yeah, and that's the first time I got to. No one ever wants me to sing back. That was fun.
Yes. Super fun.
Yeah, Carcy Blanton. So we'll be singing that tonight. I think I'm gonna. That'll be the big closer, the return to home. The show's gonna be, it's loose, you know. But I've basically put together a set of. Like a song for each of the places that I went last year. So it's like my my hashtag Bard Life year one report. Mm. So come and get it. And we'll be talking about songwriting a bit too, because starting in the beginning of February, another thing I'm doing at Steve's is offering a songwriting workshop for independent sessions that are sort of, they'll be progressive. So you'll get the most out of it if you come to all four, but I'm welcoming people to come to one. And then also on, so that's the starts on February 9th, Monday evenings in February and into the first week of March.
That's great.
And then, I'm going to start a song a day on February 1st. And I'm inviting a group of songwriters who want to make any kind of a commitment to writing in February. It doesn't have to be a song a day. It could be a song a week. It could be two songs a week. It could be one whole song in February, whatever feels right. I find that having community associated with songwriting is incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. Inspiring, motivating. You know, when you have a problem, what to do with that. You know, can't find the right rhyme. It's really nice to ask someone outside yourself.
That's awesome. I mean, if someone wants to participate
in any of these things.
Yeah.
What do they do?
What do they do?
I'm asking people to send me an email, oliviathebard@gmail.com. If you reach out to me, then I'll send you some more basic info in how to get involved.
So can you do either one?
You can do either one. You can do both. They're
right.
Not. Yeah.
Okay.
Not.
And Mondays are like a group thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mondays are a group thing. And cool. We'll start with a song circle each time. So even if you have never written a song and you'd like to do the songwriting workshop, I'm going to ask people to bring something that they would be willing to sing in a safe group of people who are all sharing. Mm-hmm. And because I'm pretty sure that's why we write songs, actually, mm-hmm. is to share them. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I really want to make sure.
Sometimes it's just for my own enjoyment.
Well, yes.
Or my
yes.
own emotions, my
yes.
own heart.
Yes, your
but
own
you're
therapy.
Right. It is powerful because I really haven't shared
really
many of
powerful.
My songs.
And
when I do,
oh my gosh, Kat,
right.
please yeah. come.
I might.
There you go.
Well, George is a songwriter, too. I'm thinking, hey,
awesome.
Mother, son. We've been talking about starting a band.
I love that. I love that.
That's fabulous, fabulous. Yeah. So, well, I think we've got time for another
song.
Song.
All right, let's. All right, so let's see if I got this thing in my pocket because I do have a brand new song that I'm kind of in love with. But you know what? I left the words in the car. So, what I do have is my little special song finder. We're going to be doing this a lot more.
I like that.
Okay, Olivia mm-hmm. has something in her hands.
And it's kind of when you would do that, like you count the
right.
the numbers.
You predict your fate. What is it?
Yeah.
Prediction
MASH.
Fate.
It's like a fortune
it's
teller.
It's like a fortune teller.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to pass it back and forth.
Okay.
Kat, you get to choose the first one. So read those words.
Okay, we've got
these are modes
on the
of
top,
travel.
Plane, horse, boat, and van. I choose plane.
All right, so you're going to spell it.
P-L-A-N-E.
Okay, now Amy gets to choose one from inside.
Okay. Ooh. I'm going to go west.
All right, so you're going to spell it into your microphone.
W-E-S-T.
She's moving the thing when we spell. Yeah, just, you know, she's like opening, closing the thing.
Okay, since there's three of us. Well, no, you know what? We're just going to do this back and forth. Okay, one more for Kat.
One more?
Yeah.
I choose a direction?
And one of those ones inside, if that's what you've seen.
Yeah. South.
All right, so spell it one more time.
S-O-U-T-H.
Okay. One more for Amy.
Ocean.
All right. So now we're gonna open the ocean. Oh, look at you choosing Broken Heart songs. All right. So this song is called Eyes for Me. And
I love that song. Yeah. I really love that song.
Oh, good. And inside my little
song oracle
finder is. Not just the song, but also the little game we're going to play.
Okay.
So my cue on this one was admire. And what I would love is for Amy, who chose the song, to look at Kat and see her and tell her something that she admires about her.
You know, actually, there's a lot of things I admire about you, but what I really admire is how you have stepped into such an incredible community leadership role.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, dear. I've learned from some great mentors. Mm-hmm. I've had some good mentors ahead.
Well, you're taking it to the next level, girl.
Aww, thank you. I appreciate you.
So clearly seeing is not a trouble around here today. I fell before the turning of the leaves, for a vision of gold and green. I spun out under the stars to the tune of your guitar and singing in harmony. You got eyes for me at all. One look is all I need. You know the look I mean. You just ain't got eyes for me at all. dry flush of spring can't be ignored. And if beauty ain't a sign, then what's it for? But if a girl's what you prefer, then your blindness ain't my concern. Darling, I'm so much more. Why you ain't got eyes for me? No eyes for me. Ain't you got eyes for me at all? I wish that you could see what is so plain to me. You just ain't got eyes for me at all. Why can't you see what is so plain to me? You just ain't got eyes.
Yeah. All right, you guys, you are tuned to KDNK. We ran a little over. NPR is about to start. Thank you, Olivia the Bard, tonight at Steve's Guitars.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much.
And K260BZ at 99.9 in Snowmass Village.